to make a plan, to do small things to get you where you want to go. We've all thought about New Year's resolutions. We've all thought about grand things we want to do. The plan is hopefully starting small with things that are achievable so that we can gradually work towards change rather than getting overwhelmed with our plan and not working on change at all.
That was Edinburgh University faculty member, Dr. Julaine Field, who is also a licensed professional counselor. Today on Tartan Talks, she joined us to discuss the pandemic and the mental health issues that face both children, college students, and adults. We talked about what mental health is, what sort of issues we are all facing in the midst of this pandemic, and what are some coping mechanisms that we can use to improve our situation and to get through this pandemic together? For Edinburgh University students, I did want to mention that we do have counseling and psychological services, which we call CAPS. It's available to provide teletherapy or set up an appointment for Edinburgh students who might need a counselor or therapist. You can contact CAPS by calling 814-732-2252 or visit edinburgh.edu/CAPS to set up an appointment or find someone to talk to. This is Tartan Talks, a podcast from Edinburgh University. I'm your host, Christopher LaFuria. Each month, we'll take a look at individuals who make Edinburgh an exciting, diverse, and profound place to discover your passions.
All right, thank you for joining us today on Tartan Talks. We have a very important episode for today as we find students in K-12 and as we find college students going back to school, as we might find classes gathering and students finding themselves in public places a little more, we are reminded that we are in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we are still affected by not only the virus itself, but a lot of the stress and anxiety that comes along with it. We have here today Dr. Julaine Field, who's an assistant professor in our Counseling School Psychology and Special Education Department. She's worked for the last 17 years as a counseling professor at three different universities and has also worked as a licensed professional counselor in three different states since 1995. So Dr. Field, thank you for joining us today on Tartan Talks.
Chris, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, and I like how we're taking this from an individual who's a professor and also a licensed professional counselor, because we're going to be talking about not only what is impacting our students, our young kids, and our adults today, but some of the coping mechanisms and some of the things that we can do to get through the pandemic together. So if you could just provide a little background about your work and about what you have done as a licensed professional counselor.
Sure. So I will try to make this part brief because I don't think this part is nearly as exciting as the other things that we're going to be able to talk about in just a few minutes. But I am a licensed professional counselor, and I'm currently getting ready to start seeing clients again at Golden Outreach Counseling in Erie. But prior to this position, I worked with veterans and their family members in Colorado Springs, Colorado, primarily working with folks who had been dealing with trauma, the effects of trauma, and had also experienced various types of crisis. So I've worked in a variety of settings, not only with adults and family members, but also with children and adolescents too. I'm a former school counselor and have some experience in mental health counseling with children, adolescents, and adults. And I've also done some crisis and trauma work. I've worked in two different crisis shelters, working with folks who had experienced sexual assault, sexual abuse, domestic violence, or who had been a victim of crime at some point and who needed additional support and services.
Very interesting that you've worked with different layers and different populations, whether it's adult veterans or kids in K-12. So what we're going to talk about today is going to focus a lot on college students because we are representing Edinburgh University and we're going to be starting classes soon. But a lot of what we're going to talk about today could be altered and tailored to any sort of individuals that are looking for coping mechanisms or just understanding what our neighbors and our family and friends are going through. So I pulled a few statistics from the National Institute of Health, They surveyed roughly 200 college students, and 71% said that they've indicated increased stress and anxiety during the COVID-19 outbreak. Multiple stressors were identified, increased levels of stress, anxiety, and depressive thoughts. About 90% had difficult concentrating, 86% had disruption in their sleeping patterns, and 82% said they had increased concerns on academic performance. So as a licensed professional counselor and as a college professor, what are some of the impacts that you've seen with individuals, whether it's school-age students or college students, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, whether it's the pandemic itself or the physical distancing? What are some of the things that you've seen?
I'll start with the college population because that's where you started in your question. Yes. And I'm not surprised at all by the findings of the NIH study. It really mirrors some of the research that's been done by the Centers for Disease Control, not only with college age students, but adults as well, that there has been an increase in anxiety, an increase in depression. So some of the college students that I've talked to about these circumstances that we're in have described this concept that I call lost time, meaning that they were very excited to be in school, starting their career, starting their academic journey. Maybe they've started new relationships, new friendships, new athletic teams, etc. And then all of a sudden had that interrupted. And when you have clear goals in mind and things that you are working toward or relationships that you're working on and working toward, it feels like lost time. Like this is space in their early adulthood where they feel like they should be doing certain things, working towards their goals, but really have had that interrupted in many ways. And I think that that can be frustrating and that can be difficult to know how to deal with.
Yeah, it's almost like they are in an ongoing hamster wheel and they're just suspended kind of in the middle of it. So they're not actually taking those steps or, you know, participating in their life events, but they're still watching everything go on behind them. And I imagine that's kind of heightened by, you know, continually watching the news or being on social media or, you know, watching everything going on, and they're kind of stuck in this, in the pandemic without anywhere to go.
Being a counselor that really appreciates the opportunity to work with families, I think for college students who have a desire to move out of their home, to live independently, to be autonomous, to have to go back home and renegotiate those roles with their parents of how they're now a college student, but they're stuck at home due to the pandemic. And what are the new rules that they live by and how much independence can they have? And I just think that that whole family dynamic can be very challenging too, even in the healthiest of families, just kind of renegotiating all of those roles and those rules.
With that relocation to home and with that lost time, we're not talking about the basics of stress. Like, we're not talking about just like a stressful day where you feel tired at the end, or anxiety, like you're a little nervous for an exam, or depression. We're not talking about just kind of being sad or being down. How is this actually impacting the mental health of these students? And how is it impacting their relationships and their life outlooks and just their everyday processes?
That is an amazing question, Chris. That's a really big question, and I appreciate you asking it. I agree with you that rather than having a stressful day, we're really talking about people in an ongoing stress response, meaning that they are having all the physiological arousal potentially associated with stress, that fight, flight, freeze, fawn, whatever. And then also maybe not able to use the best parts of their brain to think through situations or decisions because they are in a state of stress and maybe are thinking with more primitive parts of their brain. So it's hard for me not to go a little neuroscience-y on you because I very much, you know, associate thinking about this constant stress that many people are under, and their what their brains are doing to try to compensate for it. So I think that stress can cause us to have fatigue. I think it can cause us to maybe eat in ways that we don't normally do, eating more, maybe eating less because of the stress. I think it's difficult for us to think clearly, to concentrate. Sometimes it's challenging to emotionally regulate the ways that we want to. We might be more irritable than normal. We might be a little bit more weepy than normal. So I think they can have a cascade of physical, emotional, psychological, and physiological effects, not only for college students, but everyone who's kind of caught up in this constant stress response. And you're also, right, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and since we are, if you're quarantined or if you're in isolation or even just staying home, you're with family members and you might be with a close-knit group, but there's also external factors that impact your family member themselves. We're seeing a lot of people losing jobs, losing sources of income, or even losing the chance at their favorite Friday night restaurant to go out and be a family together. So there are also those things that kind of compound all that stress with things that are beyond their control. And I have to imagine that can almost lead to a sense of hopelessness, whether you're a college student or whether you're a teen or an adolescent.
Yeah, I think that being caught in these stressful circumstances, you know, I want to digress for just a minute. When you and I had the chance to talk in September about, you know, mental health, I talked about this idea of the tridemic, right? You know, this concept of the pandemic occurring, all of the economic hardship that many people are experiencing, but then also the racial unrest that was happening, social justice type issues. Now we have, you know, a political system that is also in flux. We're getting ready to have a change with an inauguration. Not everyone is happy about those changes. So it's more than a tridemic now. It's almost like a quadremic. I'm making up that word as we talk. So I think that there are a number of circumstances that people are dealing with, and that if we don't really closely monitor ourselves and think about how we're coping and think about how we're connecting with people that can help provide us with a sense of calm and safety, hopelessness can creep in. I'm hoping for the students in Edinburgh or anybody in the Edinburgh community that they are asking for support and help, even in their natural support system, if they're feeling particularly hopeless or feeling like they're not sure what to do to cope.
Yeah, and you use great phrases like coping mechanisms and getting through this together. There are negative and positive coping mechanisms that I'm sure a lot of people have adopted as a response. So let's try and shift out of the negative into the positive coping. What are some things that students can do either individually or socially or physically or mentally? How can we establish, first of all, what are these coping mechanisms that you would recommend or that you see as being successful, and how can they be implemented either on a short-term scale or long-term behaviors that people can adopt?
Beautiful question. Just to make it brief, you know, mind, body, spirit is the first thing that comes to mind. So when we're thinking about healthy coping mechanisms for the mind, that might include making sure that you have some downtime every day where you allow your mind to wander and to rest and to be creative or do whatever it needs to do, and not solely be focused on stressful circumstances. For some people, this is meditation. For others, it's prayer. It might be mindfulness. It might be listening to music and allowing yourself to zone out for a short period of time just to give your mind a chance to rest and to kind of shut off the stress response and increase the parasympathetic nervous system activity, which is the calming part of our nervous system. So mind, body, you know, exercise is an amazing way to burn off stress, increase endorphins, and increase a sense of health and well-being. Not to mention if you exercise or if you're able to exercise outside, just that shift of being outdoors in the fresh air can be really helpful and can be invigorating. When I say exercise, that takes, you know, different shape for people based on their preferences, their abilities, et cetera. But anything that is causing you to really exert yourself to a certain degree so that you have to focus on what your body is doing and what your body is accomplishing, I think can be very helpful as well. And it's very good in terms of combating stress too. And then spirit, you know, some people are people of faith and some people are not. They may have faith in their relationships or faith in other things, but tapping into those activities or those practices and rituals that really allow you to feel grounded and to feel like yourself, and also to feel like you're connected to something larger than yourself, I think can be very calming, very helpful, and also can put us in a framework where if we're focused on spiritual health and well-being, it's difficult to also be focused on all of the negativity that's happening in the world right now. Our brain is really just going to focus on one or the other. So if we're intentionally focusing on mind, body, and spirit in a healthy way, it's going to be difficult for us to be preoccupied with the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what we're seeing is things that we can do almost outside of ourselves, like finding a different atmosphere or reading up on things or doing exercise or changing your diet around. But I think a lot of what people are missing is how we treat ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that you might have an interesting insight on that, having self-compassion and, you know, being easy on yourself, because I can't think of any generation in recent history that's been through such a similar pandemic where we are physically isolated and quarantined from each other, but we're also very socially connected. We have text messages, social media, Snapchat. So we're still connected to everybody, but we can't reach those. And it stresses us out. And we're comparing ourselves to people that might quote unquote have it together. We're trying to find out if we're missing out on things. And I think a lot of people realize that you can't be so hard on yourself. So if you could talk a little bit about self-compassion and what people can do to get their own mind, you know, on the straight and narrow and get themselves into their own head so that they can start seeing clearly and kind of release that fog that they may have developed.
Yeah. Oh, I love that word fog, because I think that can be really accurate, especially when folks are consuming a lot of social media or, not giving themselves space and time and stillness to really think their own thoughts and to consider how they are feeling, how they are doing, what they would like to be doing with this pandemic time, if you will. I think it's really important that if folks, or myself included, if we catch ourselves comparing ourselves to other, or having this fear of missing out, or why is this person being so productive during the pandemic and I'm not, I'm barely getting through the day. I think it's important to kind of catch ourselves in that kind of thought pattern and slow it down and try to tap into a little bit more self-compassion and grace and patience with ourselves. We all have different circumstances. We all have different responsibilities and challenges that we're dealing with. And so that person that we might be viewing on social media that appears to have it all together and they're productive every single minute that they're in isolation, well, we have no idea what's really going on with that person. And I think trying to apply those same expectations to ourselves can really just bring about negative feelings, or, a sense of hopelessness, or feeling like we're not measuring up somehow. But until we get calm and still and centered, sometimes I think we're on autopilot and we don't even realize we're doing that.
Right. Yeah, it just becomes second nature. And I think a lot of that, once you get to that calm state, once you get to that direction you need to be, I think you also need to focus more on the metacognition aspect of it too. Like training yourself to think about why you're thinking that. Like, why are you thinking this person has it all together when you could be changing your own thoughts to, well, what can I do to calm down? Or what can I do to feel like I'm, you know, contributing enough, but not overexerting yourself. So almost training yourself to think differently could be a big step in avoiding a lot of that, you know, what that noise that's coming in that you're trying to filter out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really well said. And, you know, talking about it from the counseling end of things, cognitive behavioral interventions, cognitive behavioral therapy, cognitive processing, that's really helping us watch and monitor and observe our thoughts and think about the thoughts and, that we're having and how they're impacting us. And also when we're watching our thoughts, we also have choices to make about the thoughts that we're going to cling to, hold on to, and allow to impact the way we think, or excuse me, allow to impact the way we feel or the way that we behave. Or recognizing, you know, my brain is capable of many thoughts and I don't have to hold on to these because these thoughts aren't serving me well. And that's really the heart of, you know, counseling or therapy that is cognitively or thought focused.
Yeah. And I've noticed a lot just from, you know, podcasts I listen to and websites I visit that there is kind of like breaking that wall of seeking therapy as well, or getting a, you know, finding a licensed professional counselor or a therapist that can kind of help you through that. Because when you're looking at all these external factors and you're trying to find yourself, sometimes your thoughts get lost and you need somebody to talk to or somebody that can give you some of these coping mechanisms. So talk, I guess, a little bit about the importance of therapy and counseling and, you know, why people shouldn't necessarily be afraid or ashamed to pursue that as a mechanism.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that counseling and therapy really allows an opportunity for you to just focus on yourself and how you are functioning and how you are or not living in such a way that's giving you peace of mind or that's allowing you to meet the goals that you have for yourself. And, you know, there are people who are in amazing families with amazing friendship groups, but may not feel like they can talk to those folks, those people that they're connected to in honest and open ways that they need to. And I think that's the gift of counseling, is entering into this very honest relationship where you can say what you really think, or, you know, feel what you really feel, and have someone who's going to sit and honor that with you, and then also help you make the changes that you want to make. We have excellent counseling services on our campus with stellar counselors. There's a service online, Psychology Today, Find a Therapist, where you can not only look at the counselors that are out there that are in your geographic region, but you can also screen them to a certain degree by taking a look at their philosophy, what they're about. And I think sometimes that can help make the process of finding a counselor less intimidating, because you may know a little bit more about what you're getting and whether or not you think that you're going to click with that person. I just want to say very quickly, as someone who, you know, has a PhD and who's licensed as a counselor, I've been in counseling myself a number of different times over a period beginning in early adulthood and as recently as a couple years ago. And I really see it as a way for me to think my best thoughts, for me to focus in ways that I want to, and to have better peace of mind. And so I think there's no harm in doing that.
Yeah, and they can also teach you, I don't want to say tricks, but techniques that you can do. A few years ago, I was seeing a therapist who taught me some really good breathing tricks. And I'll never forget the first time we worked on these techniques together. It was a breathing exercise where You breathe all the way in, and then you take that additional sip of breath and then let it out. And I did that for about 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. And then as soon as I opened my eyes, the first thing I noticed was that he had green paint on his walls. And I said, have your walls always been this green? And he kind of chuckled. And then he got to thinking, like, some of this time you're so clouded and foggy that you don't realize your basic surroundings. So as I might have been saying it somewhat tongue in cheek, it was kind of literally and figuratively eye-opening that I was able to see more clearly. And just some of those little techniques that you can adapt just through speaking to somebody can really go a long way. And there are behaviors that you can, you know, use short term to get through a temporary hardship, or there's some long term behaviors that can become part of your normal daily life. So So that's definitely the I don't want to say magic because it's something you worked hard on, but that's the power of counseling and therapy.
I was just going to say that I think that the relationship with a counselor is, you know, first and foremost, how change happens. So you need to find someone that you click with and that you trust and that you think gets you and understands you. But you're absolutely right that counselors have a whole bag of tricks and techniques, and good counselors will listen to you, understand your personality, understand what you want, and then they'll pull the things out of that bag that really fit with what you need at the time. But you're right that counseling is about learning, and there are lots of new ways that people can function or adapt to their circumstances with these new techniques that might work well for them.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of what works for individuals, I know we talked a little bit about the dangers of social comparison and looking through your network to see how everybody else is coping. But I didn't want to diminish the fact that there are positive ways that you can find coping mechanisms through support from others and through support from a close-knit network. Talk about the positive side of, you know, coping through a pandemic using, you know, friendships or using, you know, kind of maybe seeing something on Instagram or Twitter that really like resonates with you or really makes you feel more positive. Talk about those coping mechanisms and how we can use them positively instead of negative comparison.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a couple different things right now in response to that question. One is, I think it's very important for all of us to realize the importance of relationships and that we need our relationships, our family and our friends, like never before. And so taking time to invest in those connections, to receive support from others, but also to offer compassion and support, I think is incredibly important. Something else that I'm thinking about too, many of us have probably heard of this concept of vicarious trauma, where we witness something that happens to somebody that we're close to or in our community, et cetera, and that it can almost have a traumatizing effect on us when we see these negative things happening to others. I've recently come across the term vicarious resilience, which I really love, and I think it's fitting in these current circumstances, where vicarious resilience implies us taking note of the people in our lives that we think are doing well, despite all these things, despite the quademic that we find ourselves in. These folks seem to be centered and functioning well, maybe even tapping into some happiness and joy that's genuine and real. I am paying attention to those people. I have some of those people in my life, and really taking note of how they describe their coping and what they're doing on a regular basis and how they're thinking about these circumstances that allows them to have more of a sense of power and control than maybe otherwise. So vicarious resilience means we're paying attention to the people around us who are managing these circumstances in a healthy way. And maybe we're stealing some of their ideas, right?
Yeah. Maybe you're looking at something instead of comparing where you are with where they are, finding the strategies that they're using and the methods they're doing to get through things and to find their way through whatever pandemic struggles they're going to be having. So that's a very interesting phrasing. So it's vicarious resilience instead of vicarious trauma.
Yeah.
You're trying to be resilient. With long-term therapy and counseling, there are things that we can change as far as behavior and cognition and everything. So instead of projecting long-term effects so we can, you know, kind of address our audience as a whole, if there were some small-scale, short-term steps that you think people should take, whether it's starting a journal or starting some exercise, what are a couple things that we can do immediately or within the next couple weeks or starting the semester that are simple behaviors that we can adopt to kind of ease our stress and our anxiety as we continue through the pandemic?
That is a very interesting question. Obviously, you know, there's the professor in me, Chris, that wants to say, well, it depends, right? It depends exactly. on the person. It depends right. on, you know, what that person wants and how they're functioning. And so I guess I'm going to borrow from William Glasser and try to address the question in this way. William Glasser is a reality therapist, choice theory. He's no longer with us, but he was a brilliant man out of Ohio that came up with this particular theory and this particular counseling practice. And he had a WDEP model. And I think counselors across the country probably use this model. The W stands for what, meaning what do you want? And it's really taking time to sit with that question and thinking about what you want right now that you don't have or that you're not achieving, et cetera. So what do you want? And then the D stands for what are you doing? So you want these things or this relationship or this degree or, you know, this, you know, these circumstances for your children. D, what are you doing to get those things? And I think if we're honest with ourselves, you know, probably some of the things that we're doing might be in contrast or might be a contradiction to what we say that we want, right? So for example, I want to be a healthy person, right? Mind, body, and spirit. But if under my doing list, I'm saying, I'm not really exercising, I'm overeating, I'm beating up on myself and engaging in a lot of negative self-talk. Every once in a while, I reach out to my friends. Then really, I can see that my list of what I'm doing is not fulfilling what I want. It's not getting me where I want to go. And so the E in that model is evaluating what you're doing to see if it's getting you what you want. And I know that sounds very simplistic, but I think not being on autopilot and really being present with ourselves and how we're functioning all day, every day, it is quite a different state of consciousness. It's mm-hmm. you know, being showing up with yourself in a different way than maybe you're used to. So the P of the WDEP model is to make a plan. To make a plan to do small things to get you where you want to go. We've all thought about New Year's resolutions. We've all thought about grand things we want to do. But P, the plan, is hopefully starting small with things that are achievable so that we can gradually work towards change rather than getting overwhelmed with our plan and not working on change at all. You know, I talk with my students all the time about self-care and having a self-care plan as they're going through a graduate program in counseling. And it's interesting because some of my students prior to, you know, working on self-care, think about self-care as going to get the 90-minute massage. Well, mm-hmm. then I need $120. I need 90 minutes. I need to be able to go to the appointment. But sometimes they're thinking, I can't relax until I go do this thing. And there might be a variety of barriers to doing that thing. So for the P, thinking small, it might mean taking a 10-minute walk related to your lunch break or a 10-minute walk in the middle of the day when hopefully the sun is out. That's not always true in Edinburgh, but hopefully just incorporating that one small change might get you moving in the right direction towards making bigger changes that are going to help you be healthy or help you feel well, right? So that's my quick answer to that question.
And I feel like any sort of tactical plan that you have, whether it is journaling or, you know, starting to go swimming or walking, that can all fit in that WED plan. You just have to make sure every one of those letters, I guess, is spelled out, and that you are, I feel like the part of my plan that I would be trying to get more aligned with is the E. I think evaluating and doing a little formative assessment of where you are currently with your plan, I feel like that would be something that's very crucial, because you can almost do like a self-assessment and say, okay, I have all these big plans, I have all these ideas and all these end goals, but like, what am I actually doing? Assess what you're doing and kind of make it all fit in. So I feel like whatever you decide, as long as it fits into that plan, it should at least be helpful.
And can I say one more thing about that, Chris? Because I agree with you. I think that E, the evaluation of whether or not it's working, is such an important part. And if you really want to emphasize that step, I think sharing what you learned about yourself with someone else who's important to you, it's a different level of accountability. If you say to someone, you know, I did this plan and this is what I want, these are the things that I'm doing, and this is what I know I need to change, but I'm struggling with this change, and I just want you to know, because maybe you can help hold me accountable, or maybe I can talk with you about how I'm doing with my plan. I have an amazing friend in my own life. She's actually a professor at Edinburgh, and she's kind of like my touchstone, where I'm able to verbalize things that I want to do, things that I want to accomplish. And if I get too far off track, man, she lets me know in a kind, loving, confrontative way, but it really helps. Yeah, and that was me, you know, having the courage to share with her, these are some things I'm working on.
And I know we all have friends and acquaintances that, you know, just tell us what we want to hear, but I think it's extra valuable to have that person that's going to hold you accountable and that's going to give you criticism when you need to, but support and motivation when you need to as well. So I find that to be very important. And a lot of these social interactions kind of have taken a hit with the pandemic, but there are plenty of ways to continue those, whether it's emails or text messages or dialing back to my childhood or writing a letter or a postcard or sending something just to maintain communication and to have that person know that you need them and that you kind of have a reciprocal relationship with them as well.
That's right. And that does take some work, Chris. That takes commitment, right? Taking time to make sure that we're nurturing those social connections and that we're letting people know that we value them and we need them. I think that's a really good point.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure we can spend another hour or two talking about this, but I did want to keep it brief. We have a lot of good topics here, a lot of ideas, but I did want to mention, just like I did at the top of the show, Edinburgh does have the counseling and psychological services, which we call CAPS. You can make an appointment online by just going to www.edinburgh.edu/CAPS, or you can call 814-732-2252 if you need any more information or if you'd like to speak to somebody. So I do want to thank Dr. Julaine Field for being with us today to talk about not only the stressors and the anxiety that we're going through, but a lot of the coping mechanisms that we can take into our personal lives and kind of, you know, get through this pandemic, whether it's with one another or, you know, finding our own individual way. So I appreciate you joining us today, and thank you so much for all of your input.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Chris, for the opportunity.